Yeah, great sound there from Meatloaf, of course, and you took the words right out of my mouth. You're listening to East Point Radio, and this is a very special offshore radio edition of the Monday Montage programme. And we've retained some of our features from the normal programmes, if you can call them that, which the programme being broadcast every Monday morning, 9 through till 12 noon, of course. And one of those features we have on the programme is this one.
Anglia.
In Focus.
Where we invite individuals and organisations from across the East Anglian region to join us live on the programme. Now, I'm hoping that we've got John Hales, who's a director and actor, a local director and actor, who's joining us on the phone now to talk about the Seagull Theatre and also a very special documentary. Good morning to you, John.
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
How are you? All right?
Yeah, good. Thank you. Yep, absolutely. We shot last week, so I'm enjoying a little downtime to look at the footage now. So.
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant. Well, as I say, we'll talk all about this documentary because it sounds extremely interesting. Now, I think you grew up in Lowestoft, so you're a local lad, aren't you?
I am, yes. It's very close to my heart. I moved away, you know, with the acting stuff. I'd go away for jobs and things like that, but... But yeah, I've moved back here, and it's a very special place to my heart, and it always seems to surprise me with the odd miracle here and there, you know.
Hey, it's a wonderful neck of the woods, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't really see myself moving away despite work now. I love it here.
Don't blame you at all. I don't blame you. Now, I know you've had a very lucky life, haven't you? Really, and you know. I know that you've been involved with all sorts of things. As I say, you're a director, an actor, and you've been represented by the wonderful Wendy Scozzaro. Is that correct?
Yep, that's right. My brilliant London agent, bless her. She does lots of West End stuff. I, however, am not light on my feet and able to go into West End shows, and the singing is questionable. So my film and theatre jobs tend to come via there and my writing jobs. So yes, but she's great. You've done your homework. Good man.
Oh, yes. I was trying to do the research, you know.
Well, that's the mark of a good host, mate. Hats off.
The check's in the post, by the way.
Good. You're welcome.
Now, let's talk about the Seagull Theatre. That's a wonderful establishment there in Lowestoft, isn't it? Tell us a bit about the background to the Seagull Theatre.
Well, the amazing beginning of the story is it was never really a theatre. It began life as Morton Road School in 1896. And it dealt with infants and juniors, and you can still see the infant sign on the door on one of the parts of the building. And it went through as a school until the war, then the kids were evacuated. And to be honest, it never reopened as a school after the end of the Second World War. After that, there was a hiatus. Then it became a coachworks. And then above the coachworks, because it's got a lovely two floors and loads of spaces and classrooms above, in the 60s, a gentleman called Patrick Redsell opened upstairs as a theatre centre working with the council. And then that trundled along until the mid-70s, when the coachworks kind of was being closed by the college, and Patrick and Rory, who was working with him, Rory Kelsey and Sandra Redsell and Paul Hobbs, all said, look, we can take on the whole building. So thus, in the 70s, the actual Seagull Theatre as it was then became the whole building. In 2005, I promise you I'm near the end of the story, in 2005, the council shut it, and it was going to be sold off for flats. And then myself and a few people managed to campaign, and we managed to raise the money to save it. And then it reopened, and I managed there for 4 or 5 years, and then another couple of managers, and then Karen Reed with Des Reynolds have taken it on to extraordinary heights now, where they've got an extension built. I mean, not like a little one. We're talking about a whole new wing. It's incredible.
It certainly is a wonderful venue. I've been there a number of times, and I've thoroughly enjoyed it, to be honest. And I hear in what you were just telling us there that it was part of a coachworks. Was this the long since demised Eastern Coachworks?
That's the one. That's the one. And the apprentices would have to go on their bikes. We've had some of the apprentices and the tutors in for the documentary, so they would tell wonderful stories about having to rush down on a Friday to get their money for being apprentices on their bike over to Great Yarmouth. But my favourite, well, one of my favourite stories is because in the early days there was a coachworks downstairs and a theatre upstairs and then eventually a music studio run by a brilliant guy called Paul Hobbs, occasionally the noise would get too much for the very kind of emotionally, let's say, fragile tutor downstairs, and he would just go and turn all the power off to upstairs.
Zero, dear.
Can you imagine? I just thought it was wonderful. And then they were both different sides of talking on camera about the interesting negotiations to get the power back on.
Now, this documentary, you were saying you're reviewing some of the footage and things like that. I know there must be a tremendous amount of work in putting together a documentary, particularly about a venue such as the Seagull Theatre in Lowestoft.
Yes. I mean, the thing is, the whole reason of the documentary was to capture the entire life of the building and the kind of study how one set of walls can be home to so many things. You know, and the big thing is that's come out is this sense of community, and the Seagull has always prided itself on being an open place in the community, and we've had so many people talking about it being a safe place for them to go, how it changed their life, how it helped their confidence, how, you know, and what's a side bonus of this has been over the first 3 days filming, we've had lots of people coming back who haven't seen each other in, you know, 20, 30 years, and it's been a beautiful thing to watch.
So it's very much a social gathering venue as well, then.
Yeah, completely. And I mean, people have, you know what theatres are like, people make relationships, they go off, get married, get divorced, marry someone else, you know, but it really is a kind of meeting place. And the other thing that's come across on every generation is that it's not one of those, for want of a better word, lovey theatres. It's somewhere that's community-based. There's no airs and graces. You know, the cast would in the early days go and paint the set, all that kind of thing. And it's not a showbiz venue. It's a place of where you can go and try something new and not be afraid to fail, you know?
It sounds very good. Now, many years ago, I was involved with various theatrical productions in theatres, and I used to look after the electronic side of it, e.g. the sound and the lighting. And
yes.
I know how that has progressed so much over the last few years, where we used to have these very large lighting control units. Basically, now it's a little box in front of you, isn't it?
It's tiny. It's like laptop-sized. It's incredible. You know, and most things can run off a laptop now anyway. It's just crazy. But we actually had the guy who originally put the lighting in, a wonderful fellow called Jim Laws, who lives locally, and he's got this like Raiders of the Lost Ark warehouse full of lights that he's helped us with over the years. And I mean, Jim's coming up for 80 now, and Jim came in and was taking us through what was originally there as opposed to what's now there. And it's what you realize is this is a place that's not driven by money. It's a place that's driven by a vision. You know, this is a place that's driven by a dream. And it is unlike what occurred to me. It is unlike most venues because it offers ground level opportunities. You know, you don't have to be, you know, a seasoned hardcore professional to walk in the doors and find a welcome.
Hey, that sounds great. I mean, that's what we need in society these days, isn't it? Something that everybody, and I mean everybody, can get involved with.
Yeah, that's just it. Backstage, front stage, you know, the house managers are all volunteers. You know, that was the other thing. I call them the invisibles. I call them the invisibles when I manage the place, because that place is built on the invisibles. You know, who's turning up to unlock or help, and who's running the bar that night. And then you take one of those people away that are giving their time for free, boom, you know, the whole machine starts going down. So it sounds corny, but it is built on a dream, and it is built on a vision of what you can achieve together.
Well, as I say, it's certainly a wonderful venue, and I have been there a number of times. But let's give out some information about people and our listeners who would like to find out more about the Seagull Theatre in general, and then we'll talk a bit more about the documentary.
Brilliant, thank you. So the easiest two ways to find out about the Seagull are if you go on Facebook, they've got their own page, the Seagull Theatre, and then if you want to look at their website, it's theseagull.co.uk.
Okay, that's great. Now, this documentary, as I say, there must be a lot of work, as I was saying earlier on, that goes into producing, putting together, researching, doing all the technicals, and literally making the documentary. Is this an ongoing project? How close are we to it being completed?
Oh, to be honest with you, we've still got probably another 3 days filming to do, and then your listeners might be able to help us, because now we're in a search for old home movies and photographs of any era of that building. That's what we could really, really do with. So it's to make it not just be a load of talking heads, you've got to keep it visually interesting. So the more pictures and footage, you know, it doesn't matter what the quality is, we've got wizards who can do something with it. So if anyone feels they might have something to contribute, then if they could email us at documentary@theseagull.co.uk, that would be amazing. And we'd get back to them and then see what we can sort out.
Okay, so it's once again, it's open to everybody to rummage around and find all that footage and photographs that could well be included at some point in the documentary all about the theatre itself. Now, the Seagull itself, I know that what we've been saying is it's got a tremendous history, and you mentioned the coachworks and everything else. On the documentary, I take it there's going to be lots of interviews with the actors and young people who get involved with various productions.
Absolutely. Well, one of our interviewers, the Seagull's always been very, very dedicated to youth. So one of our interviewers was actually a member of the Seagull Theatre Youth Group. So it's a 16-year-old girl, and she was brilliant. And just, we want that young voice all the time, as well as, you know, old buffers like me that are sitting in there asking questions. But, yeah, I mean, there's been extraordinary actors. We had a guy that really loves the Seagull, Reese Ritchie, who's now a big Hollywood actor. He came in. And literally people from every generation all over the decades since the 60s. And oh God, we also had two original school pupils, Mark. We had a 96-year-old guy and a 94-year-old lady.
My word, that's senior citizens, I think.
There you go, senior citizens. Yeah. Well, I called one of them Sir Ron because he's fitter than I am. You know what I mean? He's fitter than I am. And one of the guys that came in from the coachworks was 96 and didn't have a stick, just walked in, breezed totally with it, smarter than me. And that's not that hard, but, you know, he was just... it's incredible. So they were coming back and, you know, obviously we got the cameras going around them saying what was here, what was there, all that kind of stuff. And when you have a building that's a school with what's known as the marching corridor, it's just wonderful.
Certainly sounds it. Now, you mentioned there Reese Ritchie. Now, yeah. I know Reese has he's worked on many Hollywood films such as Lovely Bones, Hercules, Prince of Persia. Also the acclaimed true story, The Desert Dancer. So,
yeah,
as well as TV series as well.
Yep. No, he's magnificent. And the lovely thing about Reese is that he's in quite a world now where he's got to a point where agents are involved in PR and all this kind of stuff. But the guy himself is just so down to earth. You know, he came, did the interview with us, then he was off to sort his garden now. You know, there's no Hollywood lifestyle there. He's just brilliant. And Reese talked about how the theatre is vital because it was a really amazing bridge between doing drama at school and then going off to drama school and his career, because he got to work with actors older than him that you don't get to do at school, and to be exposed to kind of things that and again, several of the people have said this, that the guys get a kind of training by osmosis when they come to the place. So they go off to drama school a bit readier than people going straight from school.
Sounds wonderful. Now, coming back to the documentary, obviously you've still got some work to be done on this documentary. I take it there's going to be editing and everything else that comes into it.
When
is it going to be available, do you think, at the moment? Have you got any idea when it's going to be available?
We're aiming, but don't hold me to it. we're aiming for January, because we've got this. It's going to be one long feature length and also six 20-minute web episodes, kind of like the extended cut, that will be available on YouTube, you know, but the thing is, there's so much to collate, and what this becomes is an exercise of what you have to say goodbye to. But what we're also hoping to do is to create an online archive of all the interviews, so that people who've been interviewed or want to see other people's interviews that they know might be able to access it. That's a bit of a tech boffin question, but we're working on that at the moment.
Hey, that sounds good. Now, is this going to be put to all this information going to be put together in a book as well as the documentary?
Are you psychic? I've got someone who's actually asked if we can do a book of it.
Sounds a good idea.
Well, it does, doesn't it? But the truth of it is that I've been so head wrapped on doing the documentary itself, the kind of ancillary stuff didn't occur to me. But I think it's quite a lovely idea, and I think it could be something that could potentially raise a bit of money for the building as well. You know, so it's certainly something that I'm now considering. But at the moment, I'm looking at the goalpost and thinking, can I get this over the line? So it's which I know we will. It's not a worry. The funny thing is, you can shoot for 3 days and edit for 3 months. You know.
Yes, quite so.
Once you've got all the kind of materials with you and all that kind of jazz.
Well, they always say that, documentaries, be it for television or whatever, the actual programme is not made live, it's made in the editing suite.
Completely. I mean, look, we're very lucky. We've got a great editor, well, a couple of editors, Mark Finbow and Dan Coates, and they're magicians. But I know it's going to get a little bit tetchy from my perspective sometimes, because I'll be going, no, you can't lose that, because I'm so attached to so much of it. And they'll be going, John, we're 8 hours. We can't do a thing here. You've got to lose something. So, you know, it is all made in the edit. It is all made in the edit. There's no two ways about it. And that's why, really, I want to try and make sure there's online access, so that anything that doesn't make it, bearing in mind, we've already shot 120 hours. Of footage.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Yeah.
So, you know, that's got to go down to 90 minutes, you know, well, 120 at tops with the way YouTube. So that's why I'm very keen to try and keep the online storage going and try and make sure it's there and accessible, you know.
I always think it's not only creative when you're actually putting a documentary together, but talking of the editing suite, I think it's wonderful when you can finish a piece through the editing suite and you think, that is a really good production. And that's what it's all about, isn't it?
Oh, it's magic. It's magic. And the thing is, what the big thing with this is, that because it's such a labour of love for so many people, it's going to mean, you know, twice as much as maybe as if you were banging out an advert for cat food. It's the kind of thing where it matters. So there's a pressure on. And I mean, of course, every job you do matters, but this one's very. My dad went to school there, so it's a very big thing for so many people. And if you were to do one of those amazing flowcharts, the things that have spun out from that building over the years are just incredible.
Certainly is. It's a wonderful venue. Now, let's reiterate once again, you're hoping for January for the documentary on the Seagull Theatre to be available. Tell us again how it's going to be available. How can people get hold of it?
Well, ideally, it will be a kind of screened at the Seagull and entered into festivals as a feature film. But the most accessible way will be online in 20-minute episodes on YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah.
so people don't have to pay to get on it. They can just look at it and enjoy it. We've got another Seagull Illuminati doing the narration. So there's a wonderful guy that used to be on BBC. Oh, I'm going to get this all wrong. He's now on Classic FM. He was on the BBC, did the prom, Zeb Soans.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And Zeb is going to be the narrator for the documentary, which is fantastic. So, it's incorporating all the local talent, really.
Certainly sounds a wonderful production. Now, once again, tell us how people can find out more, not only about the Seagull Theatre itself, but also the documentary. How can they find out that detail?
All right, the best thing to do is keep an eye on the Seagull Facebook page, which is the Seagull Theatre. If anyone's got any materials that they think, oh, no, but please just send them to us, because you never know. You might send in something that we've got a gap in our timeline where you go, oh, my God, that fits. That's perfect. So anyone that's even got a half chance of something of interest, video, whatever, if they can email documentary@theseagull.co.uk, that would be amazing. So documentary@theseagull.co.uk.
Hey, John, that sounds great. It sounds a wonderful project, and I know that the Seagull is going from strength to strength, and certainly we wish them all the very best from East Point Radio.
Thank you very much, man. It's lovely of you to have me on, and I'm sure Karen, the manager, will be delighted when she hears this. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, John. There we've been talking to John Hales, who's the director, and he's also a local writer and an actor as well, and obviously working on the documentary all about the Seagull Theatre. A wonderful venue. As I say, I've been there many times. And hope you enjoyed hearing all that information as part of our series
Anglia
In Focus
right here on East Point Radio.